Now, stay tuned. We have the second hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show here on KSCO. Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. And, of course, Mrs. Future is here.
Believe it or not, folks, I didn't say hardly anything last hour because, you know, when it goes all gearhead and everything, I just listen.
Understandable. And Bobby, who was one of the gearheads, who is actually a very good listener as well. Bobby, yeah. While they're in San Francisco, our science correspondent. Welcome, Bobby.
Yeah. Bruce Lipton. I just signed up on the link there for his free audio download. And I wish I had signed up earlier and listened to it. It's amazing.
Well, thank you for our almost introduction of our esteemed guest.
Yes.
Your friend.
Do it. In the studio, we have with us our dear friend, Dr. Bruce Lipton, a local indie scientist who who is one of the foremost, I wouldn't say authorities, because I don't like that word so much anymore.
I don't have a badge. So
he doesn't have a badge, right? No authority. Let's just say he's truly fascinated. A scientist truly fascinated with the intersection of mind, body, and spirit.
Ooh.
Right at the intersection.
What a wonderful idea.
Is it even possible? Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I think you were best known for your original book that we know of, The Biology of Belief.
Yes.
And that was How Our Thoughts Influence Matter, right? How thought matters.
How our biology and our behavior are controlled totally by our thoughts and not by the genes, period.
And I have to tell you, when that book came out, which I think is now over 20 years ago, maybe I'm exaggerating a
15
little.
15 at least.
Mm. But I just remember my mind being blown by the points that you were making, that the intelligence at the cellular level that everybody was thinking was, you know, located in the genes and how we needed to make sure that we controlled that blueprint.
The genes, the brains
but
of the cell.
But the actual intelligence is on the surface of the cell, the membrane.
The membrane. And I love that. Dr. Future here just said the nucleus is the brain of the cell. He must have read that in a textbook somewhere.
Yeah, must have. I mean,
because it's in all the textbooks. And I laugh all the time because what's in the nucleus? The genes. And I say, what are the genes? They're blueprints to make the proteins of the body, their reproduction. So I say, isn't it funny? The nucleus is actually the gonad of the cell. and then I joke and say, how could a bunch of male scientists come to the conclusion that the gonad is the brain?
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree that most men do agree with that, or at least behave as if they agree with that.
Well, it's responsible for reproduction, isn't it? I mean,
but the brain of the cell is the skin of the cell, and it's a very interesting situation because nature is built on a fractal geometry, so humans have a structure based on the cell, and lo and behold, if you understand embryology, the brain and the nervous system are from the skin, from the back skin of the embryo. It turns in and forms a tube and a brain. And so, like the cell, it's our skin that is the source of our nervous system.
Wow.
And it's important because why? Because we have to adapt our biology to stay alive to what's going on in the environment.
Well, the skin is the brain.
The skin is the interface of the environment, so it's the part that sees what's going on in the outside and controls what's going on the inside. Mm-hmm. And this is really cool because, listen, I was a conventional biology guy, and I taught in medical school, and I taught the concept of genetic determinism, which the public still holds. But science has let that go years ago, but it hasn't come to the public yet.
Is there a lag time in that, do you think?
What's that?
There's a lag time in the public understanding
of a little bit of that because there's a manipulation of what's going on.
What you're supposed to believe.
And the manipulation is when you really understand the nature of the system is that genes are blueprints. That's a fact. They're the blueprints to make the proteins, building blocks of the body. And I go, so why is it relevant? I said, well, go into an architect's office and she's working on a blueprint. You lean over her shoulder and you go, excuse me, is your blueprint on or off? And she would look at you like, what are you, crazy? It's a blueprint. There's no on and off. And I go, precisely, exactly. A gene is a blueprint. It has no capability of expressing itself. It has no idea what it is, why it is, what it's for. It's a blueprint. Mm. And you go, so why is it relevant? I say, well, the idea that genes turn on and off is a completely false statement. That's false. Genes as blueprints are read. I go, they're read. Yeah, somebody's reading the blueprint and controlling it. I goes, who's that? Consciousness. Our human consciousness is activating or expressing our genes. And not only can our consciousness turn on and off our genes, here's the most wild part. Our old story in computer sense is, oh, the system is read-only. Here's your program, there's your life, okay? Mm-hmm. Your genes, your program, that's your life, read-only. The new science, which reveals how the environment is controlling genes, is a read-write science, meaning I don't care what genes you came with, in that every gene you have, by how you respond to the world, you can create over 3,000 different proteins from the same blueprint. Mm. And that's just based on how you see the world.
So if we suddenly found ourselves living in a completely liquid environment, we might re-express our gills, for instance.
Absolutely. It's an adaptive system, you know, and it sounds weird. And I go, it's not weird in a sense that are our genes totally different than anybody else's genes? And I go that the majority of our genes are carried over from ancient history. They thought at one time when they did the Human Genome Project, a little sidebar here.
Sure.
The Human Genome Project originally presented to us as a humanity. This is for humanity. No, it wasn't. The Human Genome Project was done for the pharmaceutical industry for this reason. Once they understood if you could identify the genes, you can control the behavior or character of that gene. Then they said, oh my God, if we then find out all the genes that are in there, then we can use genes as pharmaceutical agents and change people's lives by transplanting the genes. So the whole idea is the idea came from this industry that said, if we could have all the genes identified, then we can make a drug. And they thought there were going to be 100,000 genes. So they were just like rolling, going, oh, 100,000 new drugs. So Mother Nature thought that was kind of funny because when we did the Human Genome Project, far from 100,000 genes, we only have 20,000 genes. And you say, well, that's really difficult because our conventional understanding is the protein building blocks of our body need a gene. And I say, yeah, but there are 100,000 proteins. Yeah, but there are only 20,000 genes. Wow, that threw a monkey wrench in the entire understanding, because how can you do that? And now we understand is because we have the ability to take any gene that we have, modify it, and create over 3,000 different proteins. So all of a sudden it says, we are not victims of our genetics. We are masters of our genetic expression. Mm. Yeah.
If you could make anything you want out of a 3D bioprinter, what would you make, do you think?
What would I make? I already have a wonderful girlfriend, so that's done.
Okay, here's a question from the audience. So I just had to throw it in there. Okay, well, thank you. We're going to go more with Dr. Bruce Lipton after the break. Be right back. Raise a little hell. I think that's what we're going to do in the next segment.
In a good way.
Yeah, a couple of things. I'll reiterate some of the things I discussed with you off the air. Was I wanted you to talk about your understanding of viruses.
Yes.
And then also your understanding of how the internet is some kind of biologically driven exonervous system.
Absolutely.
Something along those
wonderful
lines.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And let's do the virus one first. So okay. I'll start off with a statement that I always hear and I laugh at because I say, well, this will kill the virus. And I go, well, the first thing is you can't kill a virus because it was never alive. So the idea I'm killing is like, oh, that's a nice idea. But I say, what is a virus? And I'm going to say simply this. It's a device that carries information and delivers it to a specified source.
You mean like a thumb drive?
It is a thumb drive. That's exactly what it is.
For a gene.
A protein capsule. with a nucleic acid, or actually what are called cytokines, hormones that regulate the immune system, DNA, RNA, and cytokines. I say, so what? I say, it's like a thumb drive that when this device plugs in, I say, what does it plug into? I say, you know the plug on the end of your thumb drive? It only goes into a certain socket. And I say, ah, well, viruses have different drives that fit different sockets.
Yeah, more of a variety. They have like 100 different...
One can plug into a liver cell. Oh, yeah, but that one won't plug into a muscle cell. That's got a whole different, you know, socket.
That's how the system works.
The system works by specifying the target by which coupling is at the end of the thumb drive. So I say a thumb drive contains information, is released into the environment, will not connect with any of the wrong cells because it can't fit into the socket.
Right.
It will only go to the destination.
So what is it going to try different ones until it finds one that works?
No,
or is it get attracted to the right one?
Attracted to the right one is a better word, because when you say try this and try that, that again imparts the illusion of physical reality.
It's more of an attraction process.
It's an attraction, a resonant, a vibration, harmonics process. It goes toward a source of vibration. Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah. They all operate at that level.
So I say, well, how can you kill a thumb drive? And the answer is, you can't kill a thumb drive. It's not alive. But I say, how can you interfere with it? And the answer is, block the little plugs, the little tips of the plug, and then it won't go in. I go, this is what antibodies do when they recognize a virus. They glom onto the plug.
And all of a sudden,
the virus can't go into a cell.
Yeah.
So that's how immune systems deal with viruses. Now, what's really important is this. We think, viruses are from all the outside stuff that's going on. And it turns out...
And they're not an outside invader?
Not all of them, no. Because if you look at the human genome, which has been done, 20,000 genes, that's about 3% of the DNA. The other 97%, they used to say, that's junk DNA. They tried to equate cells' efficiency with human efficiency. We're not efficient, so the cell not efficient carrying around stupid DNA for billions of years. No, the cell is super intelligent, because the 97% includes other things. So I said, wait, 3% of the genome is human genes. 5 to 8% of the human genome are viral genes.
That much?
That much. More genes than human genes, okay?
Whoa.
So what does that mean? That
You mean we're all more virus than human?
Well, we have more viral genes than human genes.
Does that mean genes delivered by viruses or actual virus
manifest
genes?
Viruses.
We
manifest
blueprints.
Our own viruses.
Parts of.
Let's go back. When did a virus evolve? Well, the first organisms, bacteria. I said, well, how do bacteria communicate? Because while you see them looking individual, bacteria live in a community. They communicate with each other. One way is they release chemicals. So that's like we release hormones, okay? Another way is they have these little finger-like projections called pili, P-I-L-I. If two bacteria pili come together, they fuse. And then the information of one bacteria, let's say DNA information, can now pass from one to the other one.
It's like a portal.
Having
it
sex.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're called they're actually sex pili, so there you go. But then
energy transfer, actually information transfer. Right?
The most effective form of communication that bacteria develop were viruses, because it sent a message to specific cells in a community, not just anybody. And if somebody wrong picks up the virus, that's where things get out of control, because the virus wasn't intended.
So is a virus like a FedEx messenger of information?
Virus is exactly what we just said, one cell wants to tell another cell or offer a change to another cell. It sends a virus, and that cell then can change its function.
Is it a cellular intelligence that's sending it?
Oh, my God. There's a cellular intelligence beyond any human intelligence.
Well, it knows where to send. I mean, so it's delivering
exactly
stuff all the time, right?
Exactly where the destination and what's going on. You know, here's for example. Let me give you the first understanding where these, they're called exosomes. When did we first start to know about them? A woman, when she's pregnant, is carrying a placenta and a fetus of totally different genetics. In a sense, it's not the mother's genes. And by all rights, the placenta, which embeds its cells into the mother's uterus, is an invasion. And by all rights, the mother's immune system should reject that placenta as like a cancer and throw it out. And I say, well, how does this placenta stay in there against the immune system? That's when we first found out that these exosomes made by the placenta cells carry information that target the mother's immune system. And when this little thumb drive of information hits the mother's immune system, it redirects the development of that immune cell to go chase after parasites, not chase after abnormal cells. So it's sort of like the immune system comes to reject the placenta. They pick up these viruses, which are, you know, the memory sticks throwing and say, no, change your memory, go somewhere else. And so the result about all that comes down to a very interesting fact. It says that the placenta cells are controlling the maternal immune system. Okay?
Wow.
This is going to come up. This is a really great little story that, let's say come back to this later, the fetal cells, okay, in the mother, okay? But I say, so now we know something else, that cancer cells, before they even form the cancer, and they could be anywhere else in the body, will send exosomes to the site that the cancer will grow. Let's say there are very specific sites, like it's the future. Liver is one site, okay? They'll send exosomes to the liver, and it's like terraforming.
See if they can change it.
They cause the liver cells in that area that got this information from the exosome to change the environment to support the growth of the cancer when that cell gets there, even before the cancer cell got there.
So is it wears
out the fertilizing the land for the crop you want to grow.
Wears out the existing territory. It moves on to new territory.
It moves on. It claims some territory and says, okay, in this area, these cells are now going to produce an environment that I, as a cancer cell, can grow in, and then it goes over there. Then I say, then what? And I say, well, the same type of exosomes that cause the fetal system to stop the maternal immune system, the same exosomes are also made by cancer cells. So if a cancer cell is making these exosomes and you want your immune system, and everybody says, yeah, the immune system will come and clean up the cancer, and then they find immune systems have a lot of trouble clearing up cancer. Relevance is they're receiving the same type of exosomes that a placenta is making, causing the cancer cells pushing away the maternal immune system from, and that's why immune system should eliminate it right away, but the cancer is now protecting its environment by redirecting the maternal immune system.
Pretty smart.
There's
little
intelligence
virus.
Intelligence here. Wow. Yeah. People, I just want to add this out here for a second, is that everyone know humans are intelligent. Then as you go down the evolutionary scale, they're less and less and less intelligent. Then you get down to the cell, and I talk about intelligence. They look at me and go, a cell? And then I go, the cells created us. We are a community of cells, and their organization is our body. So all of a sudden I say, guess what? They have technologies in the human body that humans can't even come near reproducing outside of the body.
So are the cells Democrats or Republicans?
I love to say they're apolitical because there's no winner in this contest, essentially, you know? We have to get that third party out there, the wake-up party, the woke people.
Can a virus reprogram a cancer cell?
Yeah, it can, because a cancer cell can send these exosomes to other adjacent cells and cause them to be infected as well. That's propagation.
The cell will make
copies of its thumb drive, release it, and the cells that are targeted to, they'll pick it up, and then they'll become cancer cells. So there's a viral connection in part of this cancer. It's not the whole story, but it's part of a story of spread.
Okay, so you've observed this connection where the virus gets transmitted from the immune system to the receptive cells. And so how do you then interfere with that for health?
Ah, well, then all of a sudden it says, who's controlling the system? And what we started with was, oh, genes are controlling the system. I said, no, they don't. There's no such thing in a sense of genetic control, that genes control. Genes respond.
So where does the buck stop?
The buck stops right there in that consciousness, right there in the consciousness. What are you creating? 2,700 years ago, the Buddha said, what we think, we create. Okay? So and the fact is, this is the actual biology today. Are you thinking healthy or thinking not healthy? I say, why? Because thinking healthy will keep you healthy, and thinking unhealthy will manifest disease.
Well, I can see that, but sometimes it leads to rather strict behavior about what, being really careful about what you're thinking. And, you know, and isn't there like a blue sky zone in the thought domain where you can like think anything you want without consequence before you manifest something?
You can think all you want, but the question is, will you manifest
it? Well, hopefully not most of them. You know, but occasionally, but you got to.
Well, maybe there's thoughts that are before belief. Yeah. Maybe the free will zone.
Absolutely.
You try a few ideas.
We are more than this body.
Yeah.
We are an energy field, and that our cells pick up energy fields with antennas called self-receptors. A receptor, eyes, ears, nose, reads an environmental signal and then releases that into the cell. Well, there are what are called self-receptors on the surface of the cell. And I say there's a group of them. It's like a combination lock. And then I say, so what's unique? No two people have the same set of receptors. Yeah. So, and I say, yeah, but what are the receptors doing? I say, they're reading an environmental signal. And I go, oh, wait, then my signal coming into my cells is different than your signals going into your cells because you don't have the same antennas that I do. Mm-hmm. And this is why if I put my cells into your body, my cells will reject the foreign cells.
Unless my cells love your cells.
I mean
a blood transfusion.
What if we
for
stimulate
instance,
your
you know?
Stem cells?
If there's a close match.
Yeah, but now here's this. This is very important because blood cells don't have these antennas. That's why they're only like A, B, and O versions. That's the only specification, but it's not Bruce's red blood cells or son's red blood cells. Oh. No, they're just red blood cells.
Oh, negative.
But skin cells, bone cells, muscle cells, et cetera.
Organ cells.
So that's why it's good to provide body replacement parts to use your own stem cells.
Yeah, 100%, because those are the ones that are not going to be rejected.
Right. Okay, we're talking to Dr. Bruce Lipton. We'll be back right after the break. To Dr. and Mrs. Future Show with Bobby Wilder in the studios, San Francisco, and Dr. Bruce Lipton in the studio here in KCO in Santa Cruz. So we got a question from the audience, Bruce. What percentage of our behavior is from us, and what percentage from all the microbiome that's inside of us?
We've got
millions of cells that are not human inside us now, right?
Trillions.
Okay, is that part of our consciousness?
It's part of our humanness. Basically, they've changed the definition of a human. Once we understood that the nature of microbiome was required for survival, in other words, a human cannot survive without a microbiome, then a microbiome becomes part of a human organism. And so humans are now called a superorganism that includes the microbiome. And it's very important because the microbiome, in one level, is the first line of the immune system. It covers every surface that is connected to the outside. Hmm. And if an aggressive virus, bacteria, or something comes into that microbiome, the microbiome will kill them to keep their community.
That's a part of our immune system.
First level of the immune system. Even before the bacteria can touch your skin, they have to go through the microbiome. And that the microbiome is required for our digestion. We think, I put the stomach acid, broke up the food into pieces, and then the enzymes broke it down. Well, they break it down, but they don't break it down to the fundamental building blocks. The fundamental building blocks are created when bacteria take the little small pieces and then break them down. So
now, if we have millions of these bacteria in our bodies and on our skin and that sort of thing, are they jumping from one of us to another? I mean, is there a motion?
Well, they do. They can connect. Now, if we get close and your microbiome comes onto me, then there's two options. One, my microbiome says, oh, cool, friends, and let's keep them in the community. Or my microbiome goes, this is a threatening thing that just came in, and my microbiome will eliminate it.
But it's aware of what's friend or foe.
Absolutely. And it's all really a vibration thing. Uh-huh. And I say, how can a simple thing like that understand it? And you go back to the basic fundamental insight that life is energy. Fact. No energy, no life. Then I say, well, energies interact. So if you drop two rocks in a pond and the ripples are coming toward each other, they don't pass through each other. They engage each other.
Mm, it's part of the larger system.
And there's now two ranges of that engagement. Two energies can come together if they're in harmony and add up and create greater energy than either alone. Hmm. In our experiences, we call that good vibes. Don't laugh.
No,
it's
science. Real. It's a real thing. Right?
It's real science.
Yeah. When I hear good vibes, I can't help but laugh.
Well, basically, what it says is you get more energy if you're with that source of energy because it enhances your energy, and that's why we come together. In contrast, the complete opposite can occur. And the complete opposite is when two energies come together and they cancel each other out. They're both called interference. Constructive interference, as the name implies, adds up good vibes. But if two energies come together and they cancel each other out, that's called destructive interference, but it's also called bad vibes. Mm. So I say, so what? I say, look, a primitive organism, a snail comes out of egg, doesn't know mother, father, has no school, and moves on to have a successful life. I say, how does it do that? And I say, very simple. On the snail's dashboard is one gauge, energy. And as it moves through the world, if the energy goes up, it keeps moving in that direction. If a plant that it recognizes gives off energy that it feels, good vibes, it will eat that plant. But if a plant that it encounters cancels that energy and the energy level goes down, then the snail will avoid that plant, okay? So the direction in life of a snail is to what? Read the energy field, go toward more energy, and avoid the destructive interference, bad vibes, which are taking away energy. And I say, okay, snails are people. It's the exact same darn thing. Except I say, what have we done, if you think about this, to our children, is we don't let them exercise the ability of feelings, like the positive good feeling or the bad feeling, and say, don't listen to your feelings. You know, listen to what the person has to say. Don't go over your feelings. And I go, that was the first disempowerment we've ever had. Uh-huh. Because the idea is this, you will naturally feel the energy of something is in harmony with you versus you will feel the loss of energy when something is not in harmony. And if people guided by that energy, then relationships wouldn't suck so much, because you would end up finding out, is this a vibe that is enhancing my life, or is this a vibe that does, or is taking from my life? Codependence.
Yeah, so resonance. You think that our original misdirection is just learning the word no?
Our misdirection is having teachers that didn't know the rules. And we took their lessons.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Too hard. Yeah. This reminds me, like, one of my favorite lessons I've been focusing on lately is going towards things where I feel celebrated and going away from things where I feel tolerated or worse.
Mrs. Future, you're behaving like a snail.
Oh, I knew that. I George, like that. George. Hey, I'm in the slow is good world. Slow is good. Slowing down from the crazy pace that we're going is beneficial.
I wanted to add this because when we at the break, it came up and I thought this is really the most important fact that we're going to talk a fact right now. And the fact is this, the most valid science on this planet, the science that has been tested and affirmed to be truer than any other science is quantum physics. There's no science that comes near that. I go, so why is it relevant? I say, because the guiding principle of quantum physics from day one, 1927, Max Planck, mind is the creator of this matrix in which we live. Mm-hmm. And it goes on, and even just not that long ago, an article in Nature, the most prestigious scientific journal in the world, from a physicist at Johns Hopkins. Mm-hmm. It was called The Mental Universe, that's the name of the article. And it's just a one-page essay, but at the last sentence is the summary in the shortest number of words, but the most powerful insight coming from the most valid science. The summary is, the universe is immaterial. It's mental and spiritual. Live and enjoy. And that is from the heart of quantum physics. It's been 100 years, essentially, and it's still the same thing. The world is energy. Our consciousness is energy. Our consciousness interacts with that energy and shapes our life. So your consciousness is not just something in your head. And it's interesting because how do we read consciousness? We put electrodes on your head. It's called electroencephalograph. Mm-hmm. And you read the brain activity. Well, more recently, there's a development of something called magnetoencephalograph. It still reads brain activity, but the magnetic component. I say, so what's relevant about it? And the answer is profound. The probe that reads your brain activity doesn't touch your head at all. It's outside your head. And I go, well, there's one significant conclusion here. If I'm reading your brain activity, the probe outside your head, then your thoughts are not contained in your head. Your thoughts are broadcast into the field.
They're radiated.
Radiating. Right? And therefore, and so then we connect another piece of quantum physics, simple. Albert Einstein, the field is the sole governing agency of the particle. Simply means field is the energy in which we live. Particle is the presumed matter. And it says the field is the governing agency of matter. And I say, well, why is that relevant? consciousness is a field and it shapes matter. And so it shapes us individually, but collective consciousness shapes civilization.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so since it's a field, that means that it's constantly in motion, right?
Absolutely. Your thoughts don't stop unless you shut down the machine, and then, but it's continuously in motion. Are you sending out vibes that will harmonize with something that enhances your life? Or you could be sending out bad vibes, and it's going to bring something into your life you don't even want, but you didn't know you were involved because those thoughts are transparent, and you don't know your thought is broadcasting all the day.
So would you say we're walking through not an empty space, but an energy field?
Absolutely. And that, everything is energy. There's no matter.
And you're saying all our cells have little antennae that are picking up this field? And
they're picking up.
Resonating with it.
They have antennae that pick us up as a source. Like
so
a,
they're aware
like
of
you
us, too.
Get, like a PIN number to get into a computer.
Sort of a biological internet kind of?
Well, it is. We can read the field. And that's what I was going back when I said, when the mother has a child developing in utero, some of the stem cells of the fetus go into the mother's system and they become part of her system.
Right.
And they found that a large number of them go up into the nervous system.
Yeah, I heard that the mother actually has samples of all her kids.
Absolutely.
Stashed away.
That's psychic power that mothers have, that they know exactly what's going on.
Exactly, because the cells, remember we talked about Baxter's work, move the cells 100 miles away, and the person who they came from, if they have an emotional response, the cells become activated. Put those cells in a mother's head, like a culture dish, and the child on the other side of the world has a problem, then the cells in her head connected to that child will activate. And the mother immediately feels something's wrong with her child, no matter where that child is.
Right. What is that called in quantum physics? That's spooky.
Entanglement and spooky action at a distance.
You think the technology might give us some kind of telepathic network we could access?
Or, well, that's what we can do that. You know, it's interesting, but when people start to come together and they live long enough together, if you are an outsider and you're listening to a conversation, I'll go like, do you want, yes, when?
It's like, so you just know.
What the hell are they talking about? And yet in their minds, they've already understood.
That'll defeat all those surveillance devices, huh? ESP is your main way out.
Be a good boy because your partner knows where you've been.
Maybe even had the same thought.
Listen, we have...
We got a caller?
Yeah, we have Shane from Australia. Let's just say hello to him.
An Aussie.
An Aussie. Yes. First caller here.
Yeah, I'm
Shane.
Kiwi. I'm a resident Kiwi.
Oh, this should be fun.
We're across the pond.
Yeah. They have a certain relationship, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. They're friendly competitors.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
So, Shane, you're on.
Oh, look, thanks for the call. It's great to hear you guys talking about relevant issues in regards to the human evolution. And, Bruce, you know, you're a great hero of mine and my people in the world in regards to giving wise counsel of where we are heading as human beings, and you've got a very great way of explaining that to the general population. Look, I won't waste too much of your time. Bruce, I've been, for many decades now, studying the generational social psychological conditioning of the Australian social system by what I call foreign corporate interference.
Yes.
And I look at electromagnetic frequency as a serious problem with young children's development. Now, I'd love to hear your perspective of what we're all being saturated in and what it is doing to the human psyche and basically how we can counter it.
Absolutely. That's one of the most important questions in today's world. So we're going to come back and take...
Yes.
That's a good question. I'm going to formulate a fantastic answer on the break.
All right. Stay tuned, everybody.
Electromagnetics and health.
Right back.
Little runaway, I was blind. Yeah, running down a dream.
Okay, we're at the front of the waiting line here now. Okay, so electromagnetics and health, Bruce. Where do you stand on that?
Let's start with a very basic premise and understanding the human brain is a computer. It's the most advanced computer that we're aware of in the universe at this time,
yeah.
Our limited view. And I go, so what's nature? I say, look, when a child's developing, the brain is developing. And I say, by the last trimester of pregnancy, the brain has an operating system. I say, well, good. You go to the store, you buy a new computer, you bring it home, push start, it boots up. Now I say, do something. You go, oh, well, I got to put some programs in there because if I don't have any programs, I can't use the computer. I go, precisely.
You're going to write some too, right?
Well, that's what happens when you get conscious enough. Uh-huh, but a child needs a basic program in the computer so it precedes consciousness.
Yeah.
The consciousness of a child actually develops around age 7.
Some would be in the firmware, they would say, in the computer world. But what's the analogy biologically? I mean, I always thought that the DNA would have the firmware.
It has some, but those are called instincts, and they're very limited, okay? The rest of it is acquired, learned program.
Uh-huh.
And I say, how do you get a program? I say, well, the child's brain is not operating a consciousness as a predominant activity before age 7. It's at a lower vibration called theta. Theta is characterized as imagination. The children have a tea party, they pour nothing into the cup, they drink nothing and exclaim how wonderful that tea was, or they ride a broom and it's a horse, not a broom. That's theta, okay? Imagination, real world, okay?
Seven.
But theta is hypnosis.
Oh.
And as a state of hypnosis, the child's function developed as instinctual, is to observe the mother and father and download their first thing, facial expressions. The first thing a child learns is to read a happy face and a sad face. Why? Because if the infant is crawling along the floor, comes across something new, the first thing it is designed to do is to look at the parent's face. Because the face of the parent's going to give it like, oh, that's okay, like, you know, no problem. The child has no problem with it. But if the parent gives a scare face, the child will instantly know that this is dangerous. Mm. So that's the first kind of inputs, okay? But then the inputs come, especially after they're born, by observing the parents and observing their behaviors and downloading their behaviors. Because how many rules does it take to be a member of a family in a community? If you wrote a book, it'd be 1,000 pages, you know? I say, an infant can't read this book, but it has to learn to get into the game. And so nature designs the first 7 years as download.
Mm.
And I say, well, what are you downloading? He said, well, you're downloading behavior. And I say, well, what? What the parents say. I go, yeah, but also what the parents are energizing. In other words, like a pet. A pet doesn't necessarily understand your words, but it can know your feelings. Are you happy? Are you angry at the pet or whatever? Are you afraid? The pet will then start to be, you know, I say, those aren't words, but the pet can learn those experiences. A child does exactly the same thing. So that the energetic expression of the parent is one of the things that is downloaded by a child. So that brings us to the energy field as well as to the, like, the real behavioral observations, more than just energy. Okay, it's both. And I say, why is it relevant? Because I said these are the fundamental programs that by the time the child's 7, now it's capable of engaging the computer, like the keyboard.
Well, language has kicked in pretty good by then.
Language,
right?
And now the programs of basic life, how do I get along and form and everything have been downloaded, I'm ready to go out and play in the game. Okay, so I go, well, this is really cool. And the cool part is, you know, we talked about is, well, I can add the programs, I can change the programs once I get conscious. Now, here comes the bottom line, and this is where the trouble comes from. The conscious mind is creative, has wishes and desires. Everything you want is a vision in that. But the subconscious mind is habits. I go, what are the habits? Well, you downloaded them from other people. So the habits in your subconscious didn't come from you. They came from others. If they were, you know, well, unfortunately, as the fact is this, about 70% of the behavior that's downloaded is disempowering, self-sabotaging, and limiting programs.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's a large number. So already, you know, a large percentage of programs are not going to support you. But you say, no, fine, I'm just going to create with my conscious mind. And I go, well, that's where the problem comes from, because science is also recognize when the conscious mind is thinking, it's not paying attention to the outer world because thinking is inside.
Mm-hmm.
And so consciousness is redirected when thinking to an inside resolution. What's going on inside? That means consciousness is not paying attention to what's going on outside. So this is where subconscious comes in, because it's called autopilot.
Mm.
When the conscious pilot lets go of the wheel, the subconscious steps in and runs it according to the program. So if you're driving the car and you start thinking, guess what? Your conscious mind's not paying attention to what's on the road. But the subconscious knows how to drive, and it's a millions of times more powerful a processor than the conscious. So it takes over and drives. Mm-hmm. And I go, well, why is this relevant? And I say, because science has recognized 95% of your life is not coming from your conscious wishes and desires. 95% is thinking time. That means 95% of your life is programmed by your subconscious programs. And I go, why is that relevant? Well, if the vast majority of them are just empowering, self-sabotaging, then your life is a struggle. And the problem with that is people haven't caught on to this understanding. So they don't realize that when they're thinking, whatever behavior is coming out, they can't observe. And I go, story, 30 years, I'm waiting for somebody to give me a new update. But the 30-year story is this. You have a friend. You know your friend's behavior very well. You know your friend's parent. One day you see your friend has the same behavior as the parent. So you know, you offer it. You go, hey, Bill, you're just like your dad.
Chip off the old block.
And then you back away as Bill explodes. You go, how can you compare me to my dad? I'm nothing like my dad. And everyone laughs. They have that
how
experience.
How many fold version?
And I go, so what's the relevance of this? And it's like, the point was this. Everybody else can see that Bill behaves like his dad. Mm. Programs that he downloaded in the first 7 years. The only one who doesn't see it is Bill. Hmm. Because the reason he can't see it is because he was playing the programs when he was thinking. And then now comes after that story, 95% of our lives come from the subconscious. We are all Bill. And so when we see struggle in our life and we don't see we're participating, then we accommodate that we're victims. Wow. I wanted to be successful. Well, obviously I'm not, so it must be outside is messing with me. And the fact was, no, 95% of the day you were shooting yourself in the foot. And you didn't see you had the gun in your own hand.
where do we go with this intrinsic pattern that everybody has?
We need a good mirror or what?
The coolest part comes right here. You ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The movie The Matrix is not science fiction, documentary. It's a documentary. We're all programmed. You take the blue pill, you wake up, you're in the program every day. Take the red pill, you get out of the program. I say, oh, there's a red pill? I go, yes, science has recognized what it is, and you've experienced it. And I say, what is it? Falling in love. Falling in love stops Great. You from thinking. Falling in love makes sure you stay mindful. You keep your mind on the present moment because what you've been looking for your whole life is there. This is not the time to go into your head. Wow. So I go, this is the coolest part because your life could suck every day, blah, 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 blah. And then you meet this person 24 hours later. Oh, man, life is beautiful. You know, I'm so in love, and the food's great, the music's great, even the stupid job's not so bad.
Yeah.
I go, in 24 hours, your life went from blah, 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 your whole life, and 24 hours is heaven on earth. And it goes, because that is when you stop playing the program, then the conscious creative mind is the driver.
Oh.
And that's the one with wishes and desires. So if you stop playing the program, you manifest wishes and desires, and that's called the honeymoon.
The honeymoon.
But that's your honeymoon effect, one of your books, I believe.
That's right? Honeymoon effect. Good name for the book. What is the name of a book?
And it's a great book.
So you recommend falling in love in these stressful times of fires and viruses? And,
well, falling in love if you correct your subconscious programs because the honeymoon only lasts for as long as you're not thinking. and the point is, once you start thinking, the behavior that wasn't so good, hiding in the subconscious, all of a sudden shows up in the relationship. It was never there. And then your partner looks after you, you know, after you made some stupid thing and looks at you and goes, who are you? where did that come from? And then we're Bill, so we respond, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, but don't you remember that classic Woody Allen line about if I had to maintain that level of performance for the rest of the relationship, I'd be dead, you know?
So just so we don't run out of time and get to a conclusion about this.
Sure, we have 2 minutes.
How do you know your programming because it was done in the first 7 years, especially when before you were born, last trimester, 0, 1, 2, you don't have any memory of that program, but it's running your life. So here's the point. Your life is a printout of your subconscious program, meaning the things that you like that come into your life, they come in because you have a program to acknowledge them. Mm-hmm. But the things you struggle for, work hard over, put effort into, sweat over, I'm going to make this happen. Why are you working so hard? And the answer is simply this. The program you have doesn't support that conclusion, and you're trying to override the program.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't override it. What we know how to do is rewrite the program. You can rewrite.
Read-write. So if it's read-write, does that mean the biology has a built-in instruction manual? I mean, that we can ask and get information from?
Well, parents should have that manual and tell their children about it. Okay. So that way,
yeah, there's some kind of built-in system.
We can fix it up before it's too late.
Okay, and the other question is, you talk about the micro-exchange between the microbiome and each other.
Yeah.
Most of it's good, right? Most of the is there any, do masks affect this micro-exchange?
If you wipe out that microbiome, like you have diarrhea or something, and you wipe it out, then guess what? You can't digest your food. You're going to get sick and you have to put it back. So the idea is be careful of antibiotics because they kill your microbiome.
They kill the whole thing.
They kill all of them.
Including most of them, which are good for you.
And they used to prescribe them like candy. You know,
right,
and
it's so like much more
very destructive of your microbiome.
Bruce, if people want to know more, where would you send them?
BruceLipton.com.
BruceLipton.com. Easy to remember. All right.
I got it because my mom told me that name. Okay, I got it.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, and Bruce lives here, folks. Yeah. He's one of our local
crazy
gems.
People.
Up in Bonnie Doon. And, wow. And your house survived.
My house was, by miracle, survived.
Wow.
KSCO, Santa Cruz.
Glad you're here.